Hour 2 of Wildcat Insider, John Kurtz, Wyatt Thompson, Mitch Fortner, all here with you. We dive back into the Dejuan Gordon transfer news. He is one of three. Well, four, actually, today, if you include Joe Petrakis, who was announced within the last hour, was in the transfer portal as well. But Dejuan Gordon, Rudy Williams, Antonio Gordon, all opting to leave the men's basketball program. The one that's a surprise and the one to me that deserves the most attention, obviously, is Dejuan. Pretty big loss, 9 points, 6 rebounds per game, fulfilled a really nice role, I thought, within the team, and now you're going to have to hit the transfer portal harder than you likely anticipated that you would have before. Very telling quote from Bruce Weber here. He says, although Dejuan has played significant minutes and started most games the past two seasons, he indicated his desire to have a larger role offensively. Obviously, we are disappointed with his decision, but we wish him the best in basketball and life. That from Bruce Weber. Clearly not seeing eye to eye on what was happening with the offense, and we definitely can debate plenty of the merits of that and whether or not Dejuan, I guess I would just say I'll be very interested to see what the final resolution is on this, where it is that Dejuan Gordon winds up, because I think that can tell you something about what his thinking really is here.
Sure.
If it is to drop down to outside of Power 5 and really truly go somewhere where he thinks he can be a number one or number two, then fine. I guess I can understand that in some ways. I think he is leaving a lot on the table and probably would have averaged double figures at K-State had he decided to come back next year.
I agree with that. I mean, to me, I have to be honest. I was surprised that this played out the way it did. When you average 9 points a game, 5.5 rebounds, and about 1.5 assists, and you're playing nearly 29 minutes a game, it's a little bit odd not unprecedented, but a little bit odd that you would want to leave that. And, you know, he did play pretty good basketball towards the end there. I've got on my chart here that he was in double figures in 8 of his last 14 games. He started 22 of 25, so he was pretty much a regular guy. Did go through a foot injury. We mentioned last hour, good, solid defender. But for whatever reason, feels like, you know, he needed to have more of an offensive role. And again, I'm looking at those percentages, 38% and 22% from three, and thinking that's kind of a big ask when you have, you know, some of the other options on the team that you have. I mentioned last hour too with Davion Bradford back and Nigel Pack, and what if Mike McGurl comes back? I'm sure we'll find out somewhat soon about that. Just seems different. Don't know how to explain it. Again, I'm like you. I think it's as cut and dried as this, okay? I think he wanted more of an offensive role. I don't know that Bruce Weber could promise that, you know? And so now there's a lot of discussion and a decision that he decides that he's better off looking for another home.
Yeah, and there are, I think, two discussions here. You know, if it's about Dejuan himself, that's one thing and one debate to have, and then the other is just about general attrition within the program and, like, where you're at right now with trying to build forward for the future. Because, I mean, I agree, if it literally was going to be you have to tell Dejuan Gordon he's going to be the number one or number two option next year and moving forward to keep him around.
You can't do that.
Don't think that's no. the best way to build the team for next year. But if you expand it out now to, like, just a general broad view of all the attrition that's happened within the program over the last, I mean, really since Bruce Weber's been here, but in particular since the Marcus Foster exodus after the 14-15 season, it's very difficult to build if you're going to have that many players leaving. If you have a guy like Dejuan who you've invested as much as you have in over the course of 2 years and turned him into somebody that's at least a viable Big 12 level commodity at 9-6 per game and has an established role and can clearly do some things to help you, unless you are hitting the transfer portal year in, year out to bring in guys and continue to stay old, as Fran Fraschilla would say, it's too difficult to keep losing this many players. Because right now, I mean, the 2019 recruiting class, which I was pretty excited about, and I think there was a lot of excitement about, It was DaJuan Gordon. He was a top 150 player. You had Montavious Murphy. He was a top 150 player. Antonio Gordon. And then David Sloan, who, because he was a Louisville commit at one point in time, there was a lot of excitement for him.
Sure.
Well, you look back on it now, and three of the players have transferred. And then the other one in Montavious Murphy is a pretty big question mark right now after having two season-ending knee surgeries. So the Montavious part is out of your control, but, I mean, it's just hard. It's hard to win doing it this way, doing it the way that Bruce Weber has done it, which is just building through the high school ranks if you're going to keep absorbing those kind of losses. So that to me is like the 500-foot view of this, as opposed to just hyper-focusing on the DaJuan Gordon part of the decision.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but what I would try to take it a step farther and say, if you want to be disappointed with, you know, DaJuan Gordon in this scenario, and the decision that he's apparently made, or whatever happened there with, I mean, I just think it's he wants to play a bigger role. He wasn't in a, they weren't in a situation to promise him that. He made the decision to go. That's frustrating. There's no doubt about that. I believe that you could go, and again, people may disagree with this, they may agree with it, but I believe that the guys like the Rudy Williams and the David Sloans, that's happening in at least twice in every roster in the world right now. That happens. You don't have the role you want, and it's easier to go to another place. And maybe you should, if that's your desire. And so who's at fault? I mean, I don't know how you see that, but I believe that, as an example, Rudy Williams, do you think Rudy's better off staying here and being a 10, 12, 15-minute-a-game guy, or going and trying to be a 30-minute-a-game guy somewhere else?
I think that depends on who the person is. You know, but I think that depends on who the person is and what they want. You know,
sure.
Just legitimately what it is that you want. Do you want to play at a higher level of basketball, or do you want to go be the guy somewhere at a lower level?
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, Rudy, you know, I mean, I think somebody like him who came in during the pandemic didn't have the full experience that you would typically have at the Power Five level because of the pandemic. I think it makes it even harder to want to stick around in that sort of a situation. So, but that's why, I mean, nothing against Rudy, but I've not really said much at all about him. I don't really consider him to be very consequential in this. I didn't.
No, I guess that's what I'm saying, though, is that on one hand, it's difficult to have, you know, three or four guys leave, but in reality, you're having a couple of guys that were impactful leave and not four. I'm just being blunt about that. I that's the way I see it. I'm not trying to walk the company line here at all. It's just the way it is. Now, we don't know about Mike McGurl yet. Excuse me. We don't know about Montavious Murphy yet. But I would tell you that I would say the chances are pretty good that Monty will come back. What would you say with Mike? 50-50? 60-40? 40-60?
I don't know that
we know that yet.
Yeah, I don't have a great feel for that.
Yeah.
I would have thought, you know, maybe after the Oklahoma game, it felt like at that point, like things were starting to turn to the point where he would say, I'd come back. But I wonder if he looks at it now and says, well, there are, you know, they're losing DaJuan. That may make it tougher. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on in his head. But I just think what this tells, that you have to hit the portal. And I think they were going to have to anyway.
Sure.
And I think they're going to have to likely just moving, like that's going to be the way of life. And it really kind of is. Most places outside of K-State, like most places, so many, Texas Tech, Iowa State, so many places in the Big 12 hit the portal hard.
Look at Oklahoma.
Year in, year out, Oklahoma.
Umoja Gibson and Elijah Harkless were huge for them this year.
And that's where I feel like maybe behind the curve isn't totally fair, but it's just something Bruce Weber and his staff haven't really embraced or preferred to do it that way. They're going to have to now. And I think this, if anything, is more indication of that. You know, I mean, you're losing this many players this year already this quickly. You know, one of them, I mean, DaJuan, yeah, I get it, they're kids. But DaJuan Gordon just said the other day at the postgame press conference after Baylor that They could be the number one team in the country next year, you know, and then a couple days later he's gone. That's kids now. So you're going to have to change your philosophy. This is my opinion now, but I think you have to change your philosophy and be more willing and be more open and be more gung-ho about hitting the transfer portal year in and year out, because this, you're right, these kinds of things will continue to happen. And if you're a development-based program, you can't take the hits of losing two really impactful guys year in, year out without replenishing some of that in the portal, I guess is the point that I would make with it.
Yeah, I understand that point. I do, for sure. And I do think that you will see them get into the, quote, portal business here just because, and we touched on this last hour too, this is one year where it's basically a free agency where you can transfer one time without penalty. And I... I believe I'm right in saying this, that there were, I think it was over 200 in the portal as of last Monday. I'd love to know what it is now.
Yeah, that seems like a low number even to me.
Well, yeah.
Only hearing
and
200.
So get to thinking and figuring that up. I mean, that's a lot of guys, man. A lot. So I do think they will be very active in it. The question is like everybody else, do you get pieces that will fit and will work right away? You certainly hope so. And I think they'll get somebody or a player or two that will help out of it, just because there will be so many available bodies, even more so than normal. And normal's been pretty high. This will be extremely high.
Yeah. They'll definitely, I don't think there's any question, they'll land somebody or somebodies. It's a matter of how good they are. And maybe they find a way to get better offensively throughout this, depending on who it is that they pick up. We'll see. The quarterbacks, spring football press conference last week, we heard plenty not only about Skylar Thompson being ahead of schedule, but where the backup quarterback situation is at. We'll ask Wyatt about that coming up here on Wildcat Insider. Back here on Wildcat Insider, John Kurtz, Wyatt Thompson, Mitch Fortner with you. Back into some spring football. Everybody likes a little quarterback talk. And we'll start with Skylar Thompson. I know the backup quarterback job is really where the drama is at, but I would say good news on the Skylar Thompson front in that he was cleared to throw and actually be able to cut it loose. I believe it was the word that Chris Klieman used, or the phrase, almost 2 months before the original idea was going to be, which would have been May. So some positivity on that front. And Courtney Messingham, K-State's offensive coordinator, echoed those thoughts.
His ability to throw the football, I've been very, very impressed with how he's rehabbed and how they've done a nice job getting him ready to throw the ball down the field. I was more concerned probably that would he feel comfortable if he was on the right hash throwing a seam ball, or even throwing a ball clear out to the left sideline. And he's been able to do it without thinking about it, and I'm impressed with where he's at with his rehab.
So you have the combination right now of still he's not able to do everything, the live in-practice reps when it's like actual team on team. I think they just call it teams, right?
Yeah.
That period, you still get the breakdown of the reps going to the backups, but Skylar can still be out there and you can feel better about his recovery process ahead of when it is that you actually need him, which would be the fall.
It's exciting to see that he is probably a couple of months ahead of schedule, because in those situations where he is able to participate, he's looked really good. The throwing of the ball looks very good to me, and I think he's helped those young guys come along, and you know he's done a really nice job of, at least from my perspective, bringing those guys along and understanding what's going on. I mean, Will Howard, of course, had a lot of action last year because of Skylar's injury, but it isn't just him. I mean, we've seen improvement from Jaron Lewis. Obviously, Jake Rubley is a highly regarded guy. I think all of those guys are benefiting from Skylar's experience and knowledge, and along with the coaching they get from Colin Klein and what have you. So it's a good situation right now, and I like the fact that Sky is ahead of the game. He has a great deal of experience. He'll be all ready to go. And yet, in a lot of ways, with those, you know, 11-on-11 reps, all of those are going to those other three or four guys. And that's, to me, I think that's a great thing.
Because they definitely need and deserve the reps. You sure. know, I mean, I guess nobody really deserves anything in the world of college football. You have to go earn everything. But when it's robbed because of a pandemic, for instance, in the case of Will Howard, your first spring, definitely feels like he deserves a lot of reps in spring ball. And when I asked Courtney Messingham about who was really leading the charge at the backup quarterback job, there was not much hesitation in saying that it's Will.
The growth of Will Howard, not just from a mentally, because you would expect him to be farther ahead mentally because of the number of reps he had to take last year in the season. But I'm talking his physical development, his confidence with his strength. You know, he ran the ball and had two of the longest runs we had last year. But I think everyone would say, boy, he's running out of gas. He's starting to get where, they're going to track him down. And I'm not telling you that he won't get tracked down now, but I'm going to tell you he'll run much more confident than he did a year ago.
Which I had some people, you know, I mean, I was just surprised, I guess, at some of the pushback about Will's running ability. I know he had the moment where he tripped all over himself, and I know he had the moment where he fumbled against Oklahoma State. Man, I mean, he's a big frame, and he's faster than you think he is once he gets ahead of steam, especially we saw some of those 70-plus yard runs that he had last year, averaged almost 5 yards per carry. I just actually thought that it made some sense when we heard later on that there could be Will Howard being utilized in a short yardage package in between the 20s. Because if you need a couple of yards, I mean, it's basically the whole idea of Colin Klein, right? Throw him back there and run quarterback power. Or if you need to, you can be deceptive and then he can throw the ball. I was actually open to that idea.
I loved what Courtney Messingham said there about Will Howard and his development, both from a physical and mental standpoint. We all saw what he went through last year being rushed into the scenario in a pandemic year when Skylar went down. That had to be most difficult, and there were inconsistencies, and yet you expect some of that. In other areas, I think there was an enormous amount of growth for such a young player, and a lot of it from the mental side of things. You know, I would tell you that I don't know necessarily that Will has the best arm on the team. I don't think he has that. But when you look at his body, you look at his knowledge and all of the mental things that Courtney Messingham was referencing there, I think I could sit here and tell you today that I think I certainly, without a doubt, see a better football player today than what we saw last fall, and that's what you want. You want that continued development. And I think it isn't just that, it's confidence too, and comfortable in what's his surroundings because he has been through it. We talk about this all the time, but it is so, experience counts, and being through that and understanding the pace of the game and how fast it really is, and the experience that he gained last year with that will be invaluable to him this year.
Do you consider him then to be pretty far and away right now, QB2, behind Skylar?
But again, I think a lot of it is because of his development. And then when you look at the other guys, I think, again, this is just one guy's opinion. I think Jaron Lewis is really a guy who also has bettered himself in virtually every way. He throws a really good ball. He has running ability. His decision-making is better. His body's better. He's stronger. So I think they really like his progress. He doesn't get talked about a lot because, you know, he just hasn't seen the field really. And then Jake, I think Rubley, we're all excited about Jake Rubley. You watch the guy. I mean, he clearly can spin it. He has really good football knowledge. But the reality of it is, much like what Will experienced, not last spring because there really wasn't one, but in the summer and into the fall, he's experiencing and learning all of this right out of the gate. And it makes things a little bit slower. But he will get there. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And I think he will be a very productive player. But I think that is the biggest reason why those other two guys, you know, are where they are. It's just the number. I mean, think about the number, the thousands, I guess I'll say, reps that Will Howard and even maybe to a degree, even more so with Jaron, that they've had more than Jake. It's astronomically different.
Yeah. Here's what Messingham had to say about Rubley, which pretty much echoes your thoughts.
Really, really live arm. And that's what we anticipated he would have. Very cerebral as far as taking the time to draw every play out, going through every script. But as every, quote, high school senior to be freshman is, the game goes fast. Our defense does a good job disguising things. Our defense does a good job of showing one picture and then actually playing something else. And Jake's got to keep coming along from a mental standpoint when the bullets are flying. But from a mental standpoint, before the play starts, he's very sharp.
That says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, like what you're hearing there is like, hey, really smart kid. It's just you can't, you have to go through it. You have to learn what it's like when the bullets are flying at this level.
And I know it's only been, you know, whatever it's been, maybe 8 or 9 practices. I kind of lose track as we go here and doing some basketball in between there. But I believe, I'm not sure what Coach Messingham would say and or Coach Klein or Coach Kleiman, but I think all of those guys would tell you that the progress that he has made from the beginning to now is good. So, again, it's a process, and it's still a little bit in that overwhelming stage from time to time with those, as Courtney said, the live bullets flying. Pre-snap, I think he's really good, and he will be good someday. I have no doubt in my mind about that.
I want to ask Wyatt about one of K-State's new offensive weapons. You likely can't pronounce or spell his last name as of right now. We'll get to that next here on Wildcat Insider. More spring football talk here. Not really appropriate with the basketball music here, you know, the Bulls intro music.
It's been heard at the Bill.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. My apologies for associating it with Michael Jordan instead of Bill Snyder Family Stadium.
Didn't know this was Bulls Insider.
I guess it can be. I don't know. I couldn't tell you a single thing about the Chicago Bulls this year. I couldn't. We talked a lot about the quarterbacks. I want to ask about Daniel Emadorbebe.
Okay.
Even I know how to say his name, and it's like you look at the name, you think about the name, and it still gives you a pause for a second. Like that happens to me sometimes with baseball names, guys on other teams. Like I know what it is and I've said it the entire series, and still you look at it one time and you're like
throws you a bit.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
his is one. Mitch, you want to take a stab at spelling it now?
Oh geez. I know it starts with an I.
It does. That is correct.
I M A T O R B H E B H E.
That is correct.
Well done, sir.
That is correct.
Our spelling bee winner.
Are you looking at newsroom right now? let me see the bottom screen.
Well, I can't
I need
really
to see
turn
the bottom
it.
Bottom screen.
I can't really turn it, but it's a W audition recording the segment. If I can turn it,
okay.
There we go.
All right, you're up. Yep. Okay. Didn't Break have it screen. Actually up. Didn't have it up. That's impressive. Could you have spelled it, Wyatt?
Probably not. I will get to the point where I can because, he did a nice job there because it does start with I, even though it's pronounced like it's E, okay, and then M-A-T-O-R, and then the three other letters twice.
B-H-E-B-H-E, I have down now.
Yeah.
I now know that. Now know that. Courtney Messingham says that he, tight end transfer, by the way, has been pretty impressive so far.
I think he only weighs 240, 245, something like that. He plays a lot bigger than that. He's long. He's got long arms. He's got long legs. When he comes off the ball, his ability to block people is probably better than what I anticipated. But because of that length, because of those long arms, his catch radius, he's done a really nice job of being a big passing threat for us in the tight end position.
You know, he's had a long, winding college career, starting at Florida, USC for 3 years, Illinois last year, and now finally here at K-State. Injuries have always plagued him throughout that career, but I don't think anybody really doubts the talent that's there. I mean, his brother is about to be a first-round draft pick, potentially, who's a wide receiver graduate from Illinois. It's a matter of, I hate to go back to the same Malik Knowles broken record, like can he actually stay healthy? Would be the real question to me. Now, he bristled when I asked him about his health and was, you know, kind of seemed to be like, that's a little overblown. Okay, that only happened at USC, which I get if you're somebody like him at this point and you've had that question surrounding you for a while. But I guess I would just ask you, as somebody that has seen him play some, how excited should we all be by the potential that he has.
I think you should be excited, but it isn't. I guess I'll refer back to Coach Messingham there, and what he said is what I think I've seen, and that is long legs, long arms, talent, experience. Yes, he's a bit frustrated that he hasn't really always been healthy, and I think it does get under his skin a little bit, and I think because of that, he's working, you know, to try. I mean, sometimes you just – injuries are part of it, but I knock on wood, like we said about Malik, it's taking care of your body and putting yourself in the best situation. And I think he will. He is a really neat young man, exceptionally well-spoken, and I do think he has lots of talent. From what I've seen, he catches the ball. He is a good blocker. I think this format, or whatever you want to say, this particular offense fits him really well. He did make a lot of people chuckle, I think, the other day with the Zoom meeting, press conference, giggling about huddling up for the first time in his life.
Yes.
I thought that was interesting. But here's what I would add to that. What I think has surprised him is this place and what K-State and K-State football is all about, and the excitement level for it, and the commitment of these guys, and everybody being together and working hard, and all of those kind of things. I honestly mean this. I do think that surprised him, and I think he is exceptionally happy with his choice. How's that?
Like to hear it.
Yeah.
Like to hear it. He does have pretty big shoes to fill from Briley Moore last year. You know,
huge.
Like Briley. Yeah. Also spent some time being injured, but, man, really good player when he was actually out there. And I think if you want to talk about how exactly he feels about K-State, it dovetails into a conversation we were just having off the air about the culture and getting things turned around from last year, because this would be music to your ears if you're somebody that's hoping and buying into that being fixed.
Here, I just feel like there's just this culture of work, hard work, and blue-collar attitude I can appreciate a lot. This place, it's a grinder type of place. Like, I've never seen so many guys get in extra work. I've never seen so many guys live in the film room. I think that would be the biggest difference that I see.
And if you've been at USC for a while, that it probably is quite a bit of a change, sure. You know, in terms of what the atmosphere is like here versus there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. And I have no reference point from there. I mean, we have an idea of what we think it might be like. But what I'm excited about is what he said about here. It's obvious that he, again, fits in here. I was at practice Friday, and I was down on the field watching and you know, hearing and seeing some of these guys and the conversations and what have you. It is really fun for me. I large part of why I love my job so much, because you do have an appreciation that this is a big deal for him and what he's seeing, and he has fit in. And it makes you feel good when you see a young man who looks happy, and you see a guy who you say to yourself, this guy's going to help us. You know, there's something really neat about that, because it just is fun to see those guys come in, and let's be honest, of all of the people that have come in here in recent times, he's probably been through as much as anybody in terms of travels and places and schools and injuries. And I mean, he's quite a story when it's all said and done, right?
Yeah.
He really is.
Like, Eric Munoz might be the only one that can give him a run for his money front.
Yes, and I don't know that Eric, and I don't, this is total speculation on my part. They're totally different positions and different people. I think he's making his way. I just don't know if he is as far as along as Daniel might be, but you hope he does get there, you know? I mean, I would tell you too, like with Brents and Yeast and those kind of guys, they've fit in very nicely. And it's hard to do coming in new and not really knowing anybody and learning so much on the run. I believe it would be pretty difficult. Some guys are pretty darn good at making it work right out, and others it takes a little more effort. It seems to have been pretty easy for Daniel.
Julius Brents in particular, I am very excited about because of the measurables that he has I mean,
well, he's a good looking player. There's no doubt about that. He's a good looking athlete, and Courtney talked about Daniel's long arms and what have you, but that's the other thing that stands out about Brent's is he's long, athletic, can run, understand. I mean, you can see he's played some football, and I like him a lot. He'll be very impactful.
We'll wrap up Wildcat Insider coming up next. If you have any questions, shoot them to me at the game KMAN, at J.O. Kurtz, at Mitch the Ford on Twitter. Plenty of ways to find us. That's next. Boy, this Texas loss to Abilene Christian is not looking much better today. 50-33s. Mitch said UCLA is just taking it to Abilene Christian right now. Shaka, the guy finally breaks through. It feels like a breakthrough, and then throws a lot of that goodwill away here at the end of the year when a lot of Texas fans wanted him gone a year ago anyway. I mean, he just put himself right back on the hot seat.
It had to be an agonizing night because, at least from my perspective, I felt like they didn't have a lot of energy. I didn't think there was a lot of focus. I think when you look at the numbers, Abilene Christian just out-hustled him, out-rebounded them, forced them into a bunch of turnovers. They, in all honesty, it was close, but they were the better team that night. Let me rephrase that. They won the game. And a lot of the night, they were the better team, and there's no reason that they should have been. From an athletic talent, basketball talent standpoint, no chance. That's why you have to be heartbroken if you're somebody that roots for Texas. That just shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I mean, heartbroken from the Texas media people that I saw probably doesn't
I'm
totally
being too
fit
kind.
The bill. Well, I would just say it was more angry,
yes.
Livid,
sure.
as opposed to heartbroken, just a lot of consternation about Shaka.
Absolutely. And here's the thing, too, that he fights or will fight going into next year, assuming everything stays as is. And I'm not sitting here telling you that they're going to fire the guy or that he's going to take another job, but I'm just saying it straight up. What he will fight going into next year is that he's been there now and has not yet won an NCAA tournament game.
Right.
At Texas, that's pretty significant when you think about, and you say what you want about Rick Barnes too, but he went to 17 tournaments in 18 years and had some pretty decent success, including a Final Four.
Now, Rick Barnes kind of had that reputation, too, of always being somewhat disappointing in March Madness and was again this year with Tennessee. Like
Even though they played without their best player, man. That's significant.
I saw some folks getting their Twitter jokes off at Rick Barnes'
sure.
expense.
I understand. That's what Twitter people do.
Yeah, it is. It is. Hey, you know, sometimes I do it too. You know,
No, I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying it is reality. It's just kind of what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you. So I don't know if Texas, like, if they're sitting there lamenting, like, hey, we need Rick Barnes. And the other thing with Texas is, like, you just went and got Steve Sarkisian. I get the frustration with Shaka. I really do. But I don't know that is that the best move to go fire Shaka right now after what they did for most of last year? It seems a bit harsh for me. I feel like he still
I don't think
overall earned himself enough goodwill to get another year.
Yeah. But. And in reality, too, I mean, they had a pretty solid year. There's no doubt about that. They were ranked. They won the postseason tournament. Weren't they a three seed? They were a three seed, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty legitimate. I know they have. On the patience meter, Texas is towards the bottom as opposed to the top most of the time, whether it's football or certainly in football, but basketball too, to a degree. But this, again, being repetitive here, but that didn't help him moving forward a whole heck of a lot. Now, you go beat whoever, Michigan State to start next year, maybe things will be a little bit better. But again, who knows what they will look like in the shape of their team. You know, talk about, you know, rosters, there's some decisions there too. You've got a couple seniors, and will they come back? Will Greg Brown go pro? Will Kai Jones hit the lottery? I mean, who knows?
Have you had about enough of Loyola by this point, watching them get to the second weekend again?
Actually, the truth is what being up close and personal and watching their run in 18 and being a part of it for that game, I guess I have come to appreciate Porter and how they do things, maybe even more so, because when you look at them, and I'm stating this as clearly as I can, I think Illinois had a hell of a team. And the truth is, yesterday, for 40 minutes, Loyola was the better team for all 40. They just were.
Well, honestly, now I was watching while I was sitting there getting ready for baseball, and we're at the park, so I could only kind of cruise in and out, but it felt a lot to me like the K-State game, whereas they kind of jumped out on them and always had them at arm's length and never really made it feel like Illinois had a legitimate chance.
They also never panicked once. Their defensive concepts were fabulous against Illinois. They not only I know we're out of time here, but DeSumo and Kofi were out of sorts the whole game. Never were comfortable.
For Mitch and Wyatt, I'm John. Thanks for listening to Wildcat Insider.